Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We're doing a Sunday strategy session here, and I am revisiting a startup draft that I did that I'm actually still in the process of. So I'm not going to go through every single pick, but there was a ton that happened in this draft. I'm actually going to write about it, I think, in AOD 2023, just because it was a lot of stuff that we've been sort of talking about from a strategic perspective. I will refresh your recollection on some of the stuff. It is a super flex tight end premium, two PPR, safe leagues format if you're familiar. Start one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end, a super flex spot, and then two traditional flex spots. You could start up to six running backs, for example, four tight ends if you didn't want to go with the super flex route there. So it does juice up tight ends. A lot of us play this format, and you know, I think when you get into the two PPR, one of the things, and I'm in the midst of working on this project for AOD 2023, is to look at some of these leagues. My initial sort of reaction is it looks a lot like two PPR. Two tight end, right, is really how these leagues end up playing, which I think is an advantage to probably lean into, right? So be aggressive on that is sort of the thought. So I came into this with some goals, two supermax quarterbacks, two tight ends really in the top 10, like sort of inside the Goddard line was what I was thinking in that. And again, I wanted one of Andrews, Pitts, Kittle, Kelsey, Waller, plus Goddard was really my thought there. And then four top 20 tight ends, 500 targets at wide receiver. My goal was to get additional future capital. Again, then more running backs than wide receivers, you know, lots of HHGs. I was open to the idea of being a little bit less volume at running back just because it's still early in the process. You can get to some guys later on as sort of injuries, attrition, roster cuts, all that stuff happens along the way. So those are sort of the initial thoughts. And there was some strategic pivots. So I am through, as I record this, I'm actually through the 24th round. I'm only going to really, I'll run down some of the stuff that happened a little bit later on. But I think relevant for this purpose really is the first like 14 rounds, which really ends up being like the top 15 or so picks for me. So I drew 112 and that gave me 201. And when I did this at the time, Watson and Prescott both had median draft positions of 110 and 111 over the prior month. I thought it was unlikely I get both players. And so what I wanted to do was get up in the draft. I do think getting up high in the draft, getting one of the elite supermax quarterbacks, which is Mahomes, it's Allen and it's Herbert. So getting into that top three, I do think makes a lot of sense. And as an anchor point, if you can get twice in there, right, I don't hate that. I think that there's different ways to do that. And I might try, you know, we'll see sort of how this goes in some later drafts, but I'm open to the idea of being aggressive on that front. I do think paying for those guys in a startup draft, especially if you go at it with the thought of don't get future capital or don't hemorrhage future capital, makes some sense. I have seen some other examples where people just paid straight first to move up, and I don't hate that either. That was actually something that subscriber Larry did. I think it was a podcast we've done between these two. So I did the first one, maybe three Sundays ago, something like that, two or three Sundays ago. I talked with Larry in between, so you can take a listen to that. He went about it a little bit different way, which is basically going from about where I was, 111, 112, something in that range, plus a future first, up to the top three, and he got Mahomes. And it was just a naked trade just like that, straight up the board. And I think that makes a lot of sense too, especially if you draw 112. He did something in that he did that, left all his other picks in place. So now he's going at it with just out the future first. That left him in line to get Kittle, Kelsey. That wouldn't have happened to me here. But he got Kittle, Kelsey in the third, fourth turn, which I couldn't have done because I ended up trading up. So that's the pivot, right? That's really the thing I think about. So I made the decision to move up. My goal was to move around in the middle rounds while hanging on to one of the picks at 112 and 201. So I didn't want to give them both. right? That was sort of the approach, and to not get future capital. Everything else was sort of inbounds. My initial offer was basically my first and my third, so that'd be 112 and 312 to basically go first to fifth up at the top of the board. That was my initial salvo. If someone just wanted to slide back and get inside a line later on, that was sort of my hope. I wasn't super optimistic, but I thought as a baseline, start with that. And yeah, it's the Daryl Morey approach to selling Ben Simmons, which is set expectations initially with the offer that you would take. And then it becomes shaped around what your offer was versus them shaping expectations around something higher and then you're getting whittled away, right? So that was sort of the thought there. One of the counters, all of them were rejected for the top three picks that made the same shaped offer. 201, 312, and a future first was a counter that included me getting 102 and 702. I wasn't going to do that. I didn't want to move out of the first round. But I rejected before receiving and accepting another counter, which was I would get 102, 611, and 702 for 201, 312, 512. My math on this is pretty simple. The 702 and the 512 are pretty close. And I was content moving from 312 back to 611. That's a wide receiver range. That's fine. It's a running back range. That's fine. It was going to hurt me at tight end, probably. But I felt, hey, listen, if I can nab one and get Goddard, I'm still fine in that sixth round. It would leave me drafting basically at 102, 112, and then I wouldn't draft again until the 401. And then I wouldn't draft again until into the sixth round, right? So it'd be 611. So really that would be, and then I was going to double hit 611, and then I would have, I'd have picks sort of in that range. I'd have 702 as well. And then I would pick at the end of the seventh and the early eighth. So I'd have basically, you know, four picks in like a 16 pick range or so thereabouts in that late sixth into the early eighth round. So that's really where a lot of the stuff was going to lay. And honestly, as I looked at the board, I was comfortable picking in there. I knew that Goddard would have to be sort of a play for me in that range. So I go up to 102. 101 is Josh Allen. I take Patrick Mahomes without much thought. And then I was really fortunate I traded up because Watson and Prescott went off the board at 110 and 111. So I'm not sure what necessarily I would have done there. So I probably have been not super happy with how that had unfolded. Mark Andrews maybe would have been a pot, you know, at that point. I could have pivoted maybe to Andrews. You know, Pitts was already gone. So that would have been an interesting start. Andrews Pitts on the turn there, but that couldn't have happened. You know, so I would have really had to think about that. I wouldn't have wanted to go Wilson Stafford there. It would have been too early for me to really pull that off. I don't know exactly what I would have done, and I'm for that purpose, for that reason, I'm glad I got up ahead and got one of the Supermax guys. Again, so then I get to 112, and I say, all right, like, I don't want to take Matthew Stafford here. I don't want to take a wide receiver here. I could take Mark Andrews, but let's try and trade down. All right, that's initially my initial inclination was let's try and move down. I want to take a quarterback up in here. I don't need to take Stafford. Russell Wilson's still there. I can do one of those two guys. If I can move back just a handful of picks, I'm fine. Right, I'm fine to get one of those two guys and a handful of picks. And if push comes to shove, listen, I'll wait and I'll do Brady. You know, I can pair Derek Carr. Right? I sort of had some different thoughts planned out. It wasn't ideal, but I said, I think this is too early to take one of those guys. So I trade. I offer around a little bit. And I trade 112 and for 205 and a future second. So that moves me back from 112 to 205. I get that future second. Boom. I've accomplished future capital. Great. Again, I get to 205 and it's Wilson and Andrews are still available. And I said to myself, Wilson, Stafford, and Andrews are still available there. And so there were some other guys in the range. Trey Lance was available. There was Trevor Lawrence had gone, but there was other guys as well, like Fields was in the range. And I thought a guy like McCaffrey could be a target player in this range as well. So I thought that there were a lot of other landmines that people could step on, that I could slide back a couple more picks. And I knew that my strategy was different, right? It was what I was going to look for at quarterback was probably going to be different. What I was going to try and accomplish in the first rounds was probably going to be different. And as a result of that, I thought that there was a good chance that Wilson and Stafford were going to slide a little bit more to me if I could pull the right deal. So when I got on the clock, I was able to make another slide down. So I go from 205 to 208 and get another future second. So what has ended up happening? I've moved from 112 to 208 at the cost of two future seconds. Bang, that's great. I get to 208. The person that traded up to 205 was Russell Wilson. That made me sweat. It made me a little uncomfortable. I ended up getting the next pick off the board was Najee Harris. And then at 207, it was Mark Andrews. I'm able to take Matthew Stafford at 208, 20 overall, and I've accomplished two things. I've got my quarterback anchors, that's great, and I have future capital to play with. All right, so I've got the two future seconds. As I'm thinking about the two future seconds, I don't think of them as, hey, these are picks I'm going to make. I think, hey, these are assets I'm going to use. Right, I think that's different. That's Jordan from 5 years ago, Jordan from 6 years ago, Jordan from heck, maybe even 3 years ago, would think about those players simply as, hey, these are rookies I'm going to take next year. I think much more about them now as assets that I'm going to use. If I want to come up in the draft, I've got it. And now I'm not playing on credit. I'm playing on savings, right? And that is a really powerful tool that I've been able to sort of think about and really use as a device, as I get into some of these, as I've done more of these drafts, is the ability to sort of move around picks. It's something I feel pretty comfortable and confident with in understanding the risk and those things. It's something I've gotten better at as a dynasty GM. So having them in my pocket, I feel really good about. I watched the rest of the second half and the second half of the second round and the first half of the third round go by. Pitts had gone already. Andrews goes in the second. Kelsey is really, compared to his RDP at this point, he goes at 211. And so I'm thinking, all right, well, I've got Kittle. I got Waller really as the guy sort of in my, I say, like, I kind of got to figure out a way to move up. That's kind of what's going to happen. So I start letting the board, you know, let it go a little bit. And I said, all right, I got to move really from four up the board. And so I thought, you know, from my fourth round pick up the board, it was going to be 401. I didn't think Kittle would get there. I made some offers. Finally, I ended up getting into the middle third. 309 becomes available, and I make, you know, I'd made some counters and some offers ahead of this, and I get up there. I'm able to swap the picks, right? So I trade my 401 and a future second for 309 and a future third, right? So I take some of that savings and I convert it into assets right now by moving a little bit of a slide down in the draft, and I take Kittle. So first three rounds, we go Mahomes, Stafford, Kittle. And now I'm sitting here. I'm sitting for a while. Sitting. We get a lot of stuff that happens in the meantime here. Rodgers goes at 401. We get Hockenson at 404. And then I'm thinking, all right, like, there's going to probably be, you know, we're going to watch the Waller line. Let's see where the Waller line goes. And at this point, I've sort of gotten to a point where I'm going to have a hard time trading up because it's a long way to come up. And I didn't want to give future first for Waller, right? I mean, that doesn't seem like the proper process. So I'm probably going to miss on Waller, but I got to be sort of attuned to coming back up again to sort of get inside that line. And I've got future capital I think I can do it with. I can be flexible, right? I got all of those things. Let's see what we can work out. So we get up in, I get into the fifth round And there's guys going off the board. Brady goes in there. He would have maybe been an option at the sixth round. And Waller ends up going at 5-12 right in front of me, which would have been probably my pick at 6-01. But I said to myself, like, all right, Waller just went late. And now you're going to sort of open up the next tier of guys. And I think taking anything other than Goddard here is getting too cute. It's right about it as RDP. Waller has seemed to slide more so than really the tight ends are going late in this draft, right? They actually had gone early and Waller slid. So that was one thing that I think you got to be particularly attuned to, right? Is the market slipping or is it a player slipping? And it appeared to me that it was a player slipping. So I think about it a little bit and I could have moved down. You know, I could have went wide receiver in the range. But I said, like, listen, what's the profile here that could really, really be different? And that's a question I kept coming back to in this. And Goddard was really the one. And so I said, listen, if at worst Goddard's a weekly flex play for me, is in my lineup, he can produce like a wide receiver too, and be fine. I said, or, you know, I could go trying to get Keenan Allen, you know, and I don't know how much like overall he's going to make a huge, huge difference. I think Goddard can. And so that's my Goddard pick. So Goddard goes at 6-01 for me. And, you know, now I'm waiting, right? And so now I have to wait until that 6-11. I think I said earlier my next pick was 6-11, but it was 6-01. And because I traded out of the fifth round, my fifth round slot, but I still kept 6-01. I think I said earlier I had 6-11. It was actually, I had 6-01, not 6-11. My next pick would have been at the 7-02 spot. So just to close the loop on that, I think I may have confused that earlier when I said that. So the next thing up here on the board would have been at 7-02. And I didn't have a super clear target in mind. Again, I'm being flexible, right? Very flexible in terms of my drafting spot. I considered a group of running backs to be fairly close. Aaron Jones, David Montgomery, Cam Akers, Leonard Fournette, James Conner, Josh Jacobs, sort of in the range. Now, mind you, I was going to pick again so I have 7-02, and then I've got the picks at the end of the round, right? So I've got 7-12 and 8-01 as well. So I'm thinking really in this range, maybe two running backs, maybe a wide receiver. I could go three running backs. I could trade down again, right? I'm very open to what I want to do, but I have gotten three things accomplished so far. I've gotten, at least to this point, I've gotten two Supermax quarterbacks. I've gotten inside the line on my two tight ends. Bang, I got two major accomplishments in this format. I've attacked the premiums right off the bat. I'm feeling really good about that. My next goal is I want to get two of those, and I talked about this in the previous show, but I want to get two basically the running backs kind of in like the top 20. That was my goal. And then it was 500, you know, the 500 targets as well. And then four tight ends in the top 20 and get some future capital, right? I think I may have left out the running back aspect of this, but this was where that plan was going to come into place. But I sat here and I said, all right, there's, you know, as I'm looking at this board, I'm already thinking I'm going to be kind of hurting at the wide receiver plan, right? I can already kind of see this coming. Like I wasn't getting the value slipping to me kind of like I needed to do. As I get into 7-02, for example, Mike Evans had gone ahead of me. Marquise Brown had gone ahead of me. Keenan Allen had gone ahead of me. Godwin had gone ahead of me, right? So I'm already my targets are sort of whittling away in front of me, and I can already see the writing on the wall of saying this is going to be harder to get to my target number than I'm probably going to say. That's okay, but now I'm going to need to adjust. And the adjustment that I made is to do a couple of things, right? And I think that as you get drafting more, you can sort of realize that these things are coming. Different drafts are different markets as well, so different things can happen. But one of the things that became clear to me was there is the ability in this draft to get future capital. And if I do that right now and I just put it in storage, I can put it in savings, I can figure out a way later on to pivot to a wide receiver. I can trade a future second for Lockett. I can trade a future second for Evans or Keenan Allen or somebody, right? I can figure that out. Those stored picks, it doesn't matter who it is, right? Those stored picks can trade me for someone that's going to get 7 to 8 targets a game, right? For someone falling out of contention, right? I can sort of, if I can solve that issue by storing some picks, right? That is a niche, that is right where I'm going. And I have to remember something. This is May. I am drafting in May. I don't have a lineup need in May. Don't have one in June. Don't have one in July, nor in August. And frankly, with my aspirations and my goals, it's not a September problem either, right? This is a problem that I need to figure out along the way, but I don't need to be shoehorned into doing it right now. Okay. And that's where your mistakes get, right? That's where your mistakes get. You draft the best team you can get, the best assets you can get. You do that right now. And then along the way, you figure out how to you know, pack in some of your solutions. So that's really the play. So I go from 702 and I say, all right, I can move back a little bit here and still be inside this line at nabbing some of these running backs, right? And basically using the seventh, this 702 and then the pick at the end of the seventh and the early eighth to really try and flesh out my running back situation. So what do? I pick up the future third and I received multiple offers. One was to go back to 911 for a second, which I didn't love because I wanted to sort of be in this line. And I figured, and I knew at this point that moving back was a accomplishable task. And so if I wanted to make that move, I could probably do it again later on. I could get more seconds if I wanted to do that. And I like this range, right? I wanted to sort of stick and pick in this range. So moving out of it did feel like a notable drop down. So I decided on the incremental move from 702 to 706 for a future third. So by this time I have an extra second and I have two extra thirds, right? From the swap earlier, I got 2 seconds in the move downs in the first, from the 112 into the second round for the Stafford deals there. And then I traded one of those seconds to someone for a third and I picked up an extra third here. So I've got basically, I'm heavy two thirds and I'm heavy a second at this point. I get to 706 and this deal had initially landed in my inbox at 702 and it was 702 and a future first for Christian McCaffrey. And I said to myself, like, again, that's not typically the direction that I want to go. I said, I could probably, if I want to do something like this, I can just take Aaron Jones and Aaron Jones can get me, you know, up into the mid to high running back one landscape. And I can sort of use that to somewhat replicate a good Christian McCaffrey season. And use the rest of the picks in this round to take a Fournette, to take a Conner, right? I can sort of do that in the aggregate. But Aaron Jones is probably going to be the person that was going to be able to do that for me. So when I move back from 702 again, Aaron Jones is on the board for me. Fournette's on the board. Conner, David Montgomery, and Josh Jacobs, they're all there. And I said, Gibson's there as well. So I can dodge a bullet. There's Zeke, there's Clyde Edwards-Helaire later on, Elijah Mitchell as well. So there's guys in there that can potentially slide guys down to me. I trade, the person trades up for Jerry Jeudy at 702. At 703, Aaron Jones right off the board. So that sort of puts a hankering in that. David Montgomery goes. And now I'm sitting at 706 and I'm like, all right, well, I have 712 and 801. Sort of how do I fix this to be what I want? It's probably going to be two running backs. It might be three running backs at this range. Like how do I sort of think about this? Maybe it's a receiver. You know, what is my sort of goals in this range? How do I accomplish it? Well, I went back to the McCaffrey deal and I said, what can change the arc of my team? I'm not sure Akers can do it. And if I have Akers and someone offered me McCaffrey for future first in an existing league, I'm going to take it. And I kept coming back to the fact that, all right, I think Akers is probably the right pick here because I've got two picks at the end of the round. I think Fournette and Conner are more likely to slide than Akers would, right? That was kind of what the RDP was telling me. Jacobs as well. I'm probably going to get a crack at one of those guys later on. And Akers is a little bit different than those guys in terms of his value, you know, and what he offers from a market perspective. But I kept coming back to the fact that if I'm in an existing league and someone offers me this, I'm going to take Christian McCaffrey. Right? I think that that's the right deal, and that's what I would advise you guys to do. And so ultimately, I offered that, and they took it. And I said, listen, there's a shot that I can really back this up later on with Fournette and Connor. I can keep moving around too. I know in this draft that I can get future assets, right? I know that I can sort of make up, and maybe not necessarily make the first up, but make it up in some bulk, add another future second or something like that. I can do that and solve that issue as well. So I make a rare trade of a future first round pick in a startup draft for Christian McCaffrey. By the way, Christian McCaffrey went in this draft at 29 overall. That's 305. He is a top 30 asset for me. And you figure moving from 706 to 305, it's probably about the cost of a future first. That's fine. And, you know, I was glad to do that. So the rest of the round sort of breaks against me. Gibson, the guy actually trades and takes Akers. So that was, we were right on the match there with what we were thinking. Gibson goes after, and then it's Fournette, Amari Cooper, and James Conner. Bang, 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 right off. And I'm like, ah. Elijah Moore goes, and then it's to me at 712. I wasn't necessarily in love with Jacobs at this point, but I'm trying to think of, you know, it's Jacobs, it's Zeke, it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, Sutton's maybe an option, Dylan as well. There's Juju Smith-Schuster sort of at that point. It's coming up on the to-do list. And I say, all right, just take Jacobs. Like, Jacobs is I think the right pick here, over Zeke, over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, I kind of know I've got a little bit more insulation. I've got some optionality with Jacobs here on the timeline. You know, if Zeke gets cut or something in the offseason next year, like, he could be on a Le'Veon Bell track with my luck taking him at this point. So, again, I want to sort of use Jacobs to maybe bridge a couple-year gap here along the way. So I can use him to eat up some innings for me at running back, and I still like him in his contending window, and I hope he can re-sign with the Raiders on a, you know, more advantageous deal for everyone. So I think Fournette and Connor had a better blend of upside than Jacobs, and I actually think that they have a better blend of security than Jacobs. So it's an interesting conundrum there, even though Jacobs is younger and from a profile perspective probably profiles a little bit better given the trajectory he's on. I sort of hate the looming free agency for a running back. All right, so then I'm at 801, and I could have taken Zeke, I could have taken Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but someone makes me an offer, and it's I give up this pick. I trade down to the 11th round. So I'd move 801 to 1104 for a future second and a future fourth. And at this point, I'm thinking, all right, like, this pick is probably, like, this pick probably should be a wide receiver. It's probably what it should be. I've got a pick at 902 as well. So that's coming up, like, but this pick should probably be a receiver. Like, it could be a running back. A running back feels a little bit like a luxury pick at this point. But again, then I start going back to it and I start thinking, like, all right, how big's the difference from 801 to what I could get maybe in the 11th round? And, you know, especially if you think, like, hey, the 11th round, like, that's reaching on a guy like Lockett, for example, right? If I wanted to go that route, I could reach on Lockett and probably get him at 1104. How much different is that than a guy like Darnell Mooney or Mike Williams or Juju Smith-Schuster or, you know, Sutton might be a different case, but, you know, how much different is that? And again, if I put those picks in my pocket and can take 1104 later on, it's a relatively similar bet. I can address the position if I'm wrong, right? Having those picks in your pocket allows you to make the decision later on, right? To know the road which to take and to act on that, right? It's something I talked about in the two-way go, which was, if you have some of this flexibility, it's not requiring you to be right in the draft. It's allowing you to be right when you find out how the draft goes, right? Because you can trade future picks for assets, or you can say, all right, I'm going to trade some of these players in for future picks, right? You have that sort of ability. I think that really made a lot of sense here. And so I move 801 to the 11th round for 1104 and get a second and a fourth round pick back. So again, now I'm up to 3 seconds next year and a fourth. And 3 seconds, 3/3, and I believe at this point I actually have I've got multiple fourths as well there. So yeah, so feeling pretty good about where the where that went. I get my next major decision point. Again, I don't have a receiver at this point. And to be, I'll just be super, super frank with you, to be 97 picks into a draft and not have any wide receivers for me is a, frankly, a pretty different experience. And it's not something I typically advise. However, I've come to much more appreciate wide receivers for their target value, right? Which is, hey, I need the targets, and if I don't really care about playing this game of value and of trying to be super sexy and like winning Twitter polls and all that stuff, right? If I just look at targets as a fungible asset, right, as a fungible good. And it's saying, hey, like there's a production number attached to this, right? If it's 1.65 or 1.8, somewhere in that range, right? That is the points that I'm going to get per target. And my goal is to get as many of those targets in my lineup as I can, right? Like that's my goal. And so again, if I'm shooting for like 500 or so, like in my top four, that's great. That's a really good, that's a good receiving core. And that doesn't matter if it's Joe Smith or if it's Jamar Chase, right? If it's whoever, right? If it's, it doesn't matter how the person looks. I think about this as pure money ball. This is pure money ball. And if you think about the Moneyball movie, if you've read the book, you think about the Moneyball movie as they're trying to replicate Jason Giambi. They're saying, what do we need, right? We need guys that can get on base, right? We don't need to create, we're not going to create Jason Giambi. We're not going to, you know, find a replacement for him, but we can recreate him in the aggregate. And this is really the same approach, right? I'm not going to be able to, if this is my strategy of going heavy quarterback, heavy tight end in this premium format, I'm not going to be able to play the game that others are playing at the top of the board with elite wide receivers. But I can replicate them. And I don't necessarily need to replicate them in my lineup in May, right? I can do it along the way, and I have to sort of figure that out. So that's really where I'm at. And I understand that to do that, it's probably going to require me to make trades. I think a lot about, you know, one of the things that's really changed my dynasty approach is the trade that I made for Davante Adams. I've detailed this a number of times. I'm sorry, I'm going to say it again for anyone that's new, but I had a really good team. I had Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and I had Swift. I made a prior trade for Diggs and Tyreek Hill and you know, so I was really sort of fleshing out a pretty good team around my quarterbacks, and I had Mac Jones, and I just took Mac Jones in the rookie draft, right? I took him at what I thought was the right price, and I said, I will figure this out later. I'll figure it out later. And what did I do? I took a rare asset, starting quarterback, put him on my bench and said, he's probably not going to be in my starting lineup when this is of consequence, but he's an asset that I can figure out along the way, right? And we can figure that out. So what do? I'm able to trade him and pawn him into Davante Adams and use Adams down the stretch to actually, he wins me a game. Literally, I sat here and watched him go over the point threshold. I believe it was a Sunday night game, and he actually wins me a week. Right. I think a lot about that. Right, and a lot about how the decisions that we make in June should try and set up what we do in down the line, right? And that should really be something that we should think about. So that was my plan, and I said I need to do this as many times as I can, have assets, have asset flexibility, so that way when I get to having that need, or like when I know my team's good and I say, here, I can really reinforce this, I've got assets to do that with. So I get to 902. I say that as a sort of backstop for this. I get to 902, and there's a couple of things that are abundantly clear to me. Tight end's not the selection, right? It is in a range of Noah Fant, Cole Kmet, Gesicki. I've talked about this range as being that you take tight end 15, you don't take tight end 9, right? That's how you get kind of trapped in this at this position. And so that, it was abundantly clear to me that that wasn't the selection. It was also abundantly clear to me at this point that running back wasn't the selection. We're into basically, it was either Miles Sanders, or you're beginning to look at some of your premium injury away type guys. So instantly I sort of set that aside. Jameis Winston's available at quarterback. Juju Smith-Schuster had gone off the board. Michael Thomas had gone off the board. Mike Williams had gone off the board. Darnell Mooney had gone off the board. All guys that I would have considered at this spot. So I'm really sort of boxed, right? And again, now my wide receiver thing is really starting to take a – I can count to 500, and I can do the math to that. And the pieces probably aren't going to fit. And I'm just not going to be able to do that at this point. But that's okay, right? I know I have to pivot. And I've done it in a way that I haven't sort of overextended myself. So I have reserves, right? I have stuff in reserve that if this happens, right, you think about if you're doing a home improvement project, right, and you spend every single dollar on the home improvement project, something inevitably is going to go wrong. And now you're stuck because you can't fix it because you've spent every dollar on the project, right? Where you want to have something in savings to sort of figure that out. It's exactly what I'm thinking here. And so I say, what's the right play? What is the thing that can either get me a core player, get me a star, or who can be a star? And Cooks is here, Allen Robinson are both here. But it becomes crystal clear to me that the best quarterback on the board is Jameis Winston. And the other person here that is different, right, that could be a star or could get me a star, is Sky Moore. And I thought a lot about this. I talked to multiple people about this. And it came down to me of Sky Moore, I believe, has wide receiver one for Patrick Mahomes in his range of outcomes. I think I could sell that. I think that's a sellable thing to somebody for an upgrade, especially if someone's not contending. You've got a lot of people moving around picks, a lot of people choosing different contending windows. There's going to be matches made in this. I can use Sky Moore at some point to pivot to that. I can't do Cooks. I can't use Allen Robinson to do that. They're more depth pieces, and I've got picks coming up that I can potentially move down, you know, and take those guys there. I probably can't do that with them. I might be able to do it with Sky Moore. But the other thing I really think about is, well, what's rare, right? Like, you could say the same thing about Christian Watson, right? You could say the same thing about him, that he could be the wide receiver one for a really good quarterback. And so I thought a lot, you know, what's the right approach? And I think if you could take a quarterback that's got top six on his resume, that could be a top 12 guy, that is probably in a multi-year window in a format that is quarterback premium, like, that's probably the right pick. And I kept going back and forth. You know, I talked to Adam, you know, I thought a lot about this, and I ultimately settled on taking Jameis Winston. And I take Jameis here as quarterback three. And now at this point, I've got two running backs. Well, I've got two quarterbacks, right? I've got Stafford and Mahomes. I have two tight ends in Kittle and Goddard. I've got two running backs in McCaffrey and Jacobs, and I've got Winston. If something goes wrong at quarterback, I have that solved. I've got assets to win now, and I've got tradable assets, right? I've got basically a good combination of everything across the board. So pretty happy about where that leaves me in terms of assets. I end up getting down here to 912, and unfortunately, again, I got 912 and I got 1001. Unfortunately for me at this point, Robinson goes at 911, right? I thought maybe if Robinson and Cooks are available at the 910 turn, which I thought was possible by RDP, I could take them both and I'll be like awesome. Like, my team's got a really good chance of being awesome in year one. Robinson goes right in front of me, which was tough, right? That sucked, really. I wasn't happy about that happening. But I said, okay, I can take Cooks and I can pivot, right? I can pivot. Again, now I go back to, how do I pivot? What's the pivot that I make? I could take Christian Watson. I could take Miles Sanders. You know, there's other guys sort of in the range. Like, I could go Tony Pollard, injury way running back. James Cook is available sort of in this range as well. But I keep saying to myself, like, all right, like, I can sort of do that later. What do I need to do? Well, I need to figure out receiver at some point, and I need to sort of start addressing my top 20 tight ends. I get an offer that comes in And I love these offers, especially in this range. I give up 10.01, I get 13.03 and 13.11. And listen, the odds and the probabilities and all that, like at that point in the draft, taking 2-for-1 is the right call, because most of these guys are unlikely to hit. So if you're moving from one guy that's unlikely to hit to two guys that are unlikely to hit, your odds of hitting are actually better. So it becomes a numbers thing. Plus, it gives me some flexibility. You know, what do I know? I know I want injury running backs. I know I want a lot of them. I know I want tight ends. And I know that Ertz and Gronk are going to be guys for me that are interesting. Hunter Henry as well sort of might be in that range for me. And I don't have a clear answer at this one. If I stayed and picked, it's probably Christian Watson. But I say, okay, like I can sort of slide down and figure it out. I got Lockett. I got Thielen sort of in my crosshairs in terms of what I'm thinking about. And I said, listen, I can get to that point and figure those guys out. Again, I've got future assets. I can move around. I can sort of stockpile as well. So then I get to 1104. And I'm at 1104. And again, I'm not going through all of these. I'm going to go basically up to my 15th pick. I believe it's 15th pick, which is at 1401. And then I'm going to sort of, you know, and then the answer is I go injury way running backs for a while. And I haven't finished, but you sort of get, you know, sort of what the resume is after that. I take a shot on Sterling Shepard deeper in the draft as well, just because I thought, hey, like there's 100 targets that could be here. But be that as it may, so I get to 1104 and I say to myself, like, all right, what's the guy that could be different? And I'm looking at it and I'm doing this research for some of the pods that you've heard, and Gabe Davis has got a massively odd split. He's really highly valued in an underdog ADP, but he's really not valued in dynasty ADP. And I said to myself, I can really, I guess I can understand why, but at this point of a draft and at this point of a position, those things, those inefficiencies shouldn't happen, because you shouldn't really be playing long-term at wide receiver 40 and beyond. You should be playing for the near term at wide receiver 40 and beyond, right? We shouldn't be rostering long-term guys in that range. We should be rostering guys that can help us in that range. We don't want to roster 12 of them. We want to roster 5 or 6 of them. And we want guys in the range that can help us this year. And Gabe Davis has an ADP of at underdog of wide receiver 24. There is a chance that he does that and is actually the wide receiver 2 for Josh Allen for a while. I don't think it's super, super likely. I don't think that it's super, super likely that that happens, but there's a chance, right? That is a fat tail type of event that could happen. And if that happens, that really changes the arc of my team, right? I want to sort of have situations like that that could happen on my roster. And we've done that a little bit, right? We have Goddard, right? We've got those types of things. We've got, you know, if Jameis Winston's really good, right, that can really change the arc of my team. So we've embraced some of that stuff. And I think with Gabe Davis, he's there as well, right? Now he's going to fit in as wide receiver 2. That's too high. If we're being frankly honest with where my team is at, it's too much, right? It's too high on the board. However, and here's the key part to this. His RDP at the point was wide receiver 38, right? That means half the time he goes ahead of 38, half the time he goes after 38. He is sitting on the board for me at wide receiver 50. And I look around and I say, this, right? He is a top 24 ADP guy in redraft leagues, and he's here too late. He just is here too late. And I look around and I say, what guy can make a big difference from this range? And really like be a big swing. He's the guy. There's another one in this range as well, Kadarius Toney, and I thought maybe I could get him later on at my next pick, which had been 11, 12, and 1201. But I felt pretty confident that Gabe Davis wouldn't be there. And a wide receiver 50 is going behind Jahan Dotson, Pickens, DeAndre Hopkins has got a good case to go ahead of him. But you start looking around and you're saying, okay, like this, here's a player that we've seen make a difference in a big stage. And they've cleared out the depth chart in front of him, and the market, the more efficient near-term market, is right on this, or is has reacted to this, and the dynasty marketplace hasn't. I'm going to trust the incentivized near-term market because that's more where I want to align my decision process with than with the dynasty market in this particular range, because I know at this range that people are overvaluing longevity, and that's not what I want to do. So I'm going to take Davis, and that's going to be a shot that, listen, it's frankly different than I would typically make, but I think it has a potential fat tail, and I think that it's underpriced at this point, right? There's a question of, is there really value? Is there these sorts of things? But he's going after, way after value, and he sticks out for where he is. He's a rare asset at that point, wide receiver 50. I'm taking him. So I get to the end of the 11th round. Again, these are my own picks. I'm able to take Ertz and Lockett. And again, that's really solid. Again, now I have three wide receivers. Lockett's probably better off as a fourth, but I've got three, and I can figure that out. Again, because I've stocked up future assets. And Ertz is going to fit in as my tight end three. And listen, he could play ahead of Goddard if he's better. Like, there's a chance that he's better than Goddard this year, maybe even next year, right? If the Eagles don't pass a lot more. And like, there's a chance that he's a flex play, right, for me. And I know that like wide receiver is probably not going to be in my flex. Running back's probably going to be in my flex. But if I have a tight end producing top 8 valuations on a weekly basis, they're probably in my flex, and that's really the story with him. So those two guys match up well there. I get to the 13th round. That's probably Adam Thielen range. He goes right in front of me. I'm at 13.03, which is one of the trade down pieces. He goes at 13.01, so I was kind of bummed about that. Chase Edmund goes right in front of me as well. Hunter Henry, Evan Ingram are going off the board. So this is signaling to me, hey, it's probably a couple of things going on here. Like, it's probably going to be tight end time pretty soon for me if I want to get my fourth guy in the top 20. And running backs are starting to flow. Right, also, wide receiver is probably not a target in this range, right? Those are all the things that are pretty clear to me at that point. I get to 13.01, and I take Cordarrelle Patterson. Notable, we had a conversation about this in the GroupMe chat. I took Cordarrelle Patterson ahead of Alexander Mattison. I think Cordarrelle Patterson this year is kind of what you're hoping Alexander Mattison gets next year, right? With a clear opportunity to be the running back one on his team. I think that's maybe tough for Alexander Mattison to truly get. Is he more of like a Mike Davis or something like that last year where it wasn't a clear running back one? I think Patterson can clearly be the running back one for that team. And you're going after Edmonds, right? You're going after Alec Pierce. Brevin Jordan has gone. Kareem Hunt, who I don't think there's any chance that he's going to be the running back one for his team outside of an injury. He's going right ahead of Ramondre Stevenson. So he's in the right range for me. And again, I'm looking for guys that can make a difference. I think he could make a difference. He could be a mid running back two or even better. We've seen that. And I think he's probably underpriced for that. Like, he's walking out there as a week one starter, and you're taking Devin Singletary. You're taking him in the range of Devin Singletary, Michael Carter, Ramondre Stevenson. None of those guys are doing that. Again, and why is that? Well, it's age. Right, why is that? It's age. Running back 39, I'm not really playing an age game there. These guys, you're all just hoping for, you know, spot starts. I'm just taking mine with Cordarrelle Patterson, hopefully at the beginning of the season. So that's the bet there. I get to 13-11. Gronkowski's there. It's a pretty easy selection for me. Again, I could whiff, but here's the thing. With a guy like Gronkowski, this is great because Gronkowski, at this point, he comes off the board as tight end 22, so perfectly reasonable. He's after Joku, after McBride, after Hunter Henry, Brevin Jordan, Evan Ingram have all gone in front of him. And he's basically really kind of like the last difference maker for me. Higby goes later on than him. It's Jelani Woods, but like, I really sort of nailed the tier line of that. So super excited about that one. And then I take Madison right after him. So I get that Madison-Patterson sort of blend. Now I've got four running backs, I've got four tight ends. And then I back it up. And this is an interesting one and something I typically don't do a ton of, which is drafting sort of developmental wide receivers or depth wide receivers. if I want to take a guy, if I want to take a big swing, how do I do it? Well, you take a big swing on a guy that, if he's right, can really be a big difference maker. And I think that the answer to this question is not Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I think through his rookie deal, we have seen that he is not the the Tyreek Hill reincarnate. However, we have not seen him in an offense that sort of embraces the vertical sort of Tyreek Hill element that he can offer, right? As good as Rodgers is, I'm not sure that Marquez Valdes-Scantling is best fit with this iteration of Rodgers, right? And we've seen that. Like, what does Adams want to do? He wants to sort of, or what does Rodgers want to do? A lot of stuff that Adams was doing, right? There was the beautiful blend because of that. If Mahomes wants to hang out in the pocket for 3 seconds, which is something that Rodgers definitely doesn't want to do, Marquez Valdes-Scantling streaking down the field is the type of guy that can exploit that in a way that he can't exploit it with Rodgers. Just because that's not what Rodgers wants to do. Rodgers doesn't want to hang out that extra half a second, three quarters of a second, and see how it all unfolds. He wants to get the hell out of Dodge, right? That's what he wants, to play pitch and catch and be distributor, where Mahomes wants to hang out and do the long ball thing. I don't think that Marquez Valdes-Scantling is going to be a big time difference maker. But again, I think that black swan, that huge fat tail, is in his range of outcomes. And I think at this price, you take it. So that's really the lean for him there. That's what I went at 1401. And then, yeah, I mean, then that's really kind of like the early chunk of the team. I take some pivots later on, Robinson, Ty Davis Price in the 15th, 16th round. I timed out. I'm still pissed about this. I timed out in the 17th round. It was in the middle of dinner and Memorial Day. Like, I was cooking. I was with my family. I was cooking. I got distracted. I saw that I was on the clock. I got distracted by my kids. I came back like 45 minutes later and I missed my pick. And I was like, ugh. But it was Chad Williams. So, probably going to just cut him, but that was unfortunate. It happens to us all. Samaje Perine, Gus Edwards later on. I take Jacoby Brissett as a kind of a big swing. Again, if he's a starter, I he's an asset that I can use probably at some point. Kenyon Drake, which is interesting, running back 70. Rex Burkhead is a nominal starter in Houston, running back 74 in the 22nd round. Sterling Shepard, again, you're counting targets. 100 is not unreasonable. And again, I don't have a ton of great options. I don't think he's going to change the world. But if he got me 100 targets, like, that kind of gets me closer to my number that I need at like a top four. He could potentially play for me. And again, if that offense is better, right? Just think of how things can change that can benefit us. If that offense is better because of him, and that offense really was Brian Daboll had. I heard this just this week. It was kind of a really good analogy. Brian Daboll had a bunch of guys that, like, their way of doing it was getting open, where a lot of the stuff that the Giants have is actually, you know, throwing a lot of back shoulders. And how's that going to fit, like, a guy like Galladay? Well, Sterling Shepard's actually a get open guy. And so if you're sort of struggling to sort of figure out ways to exploit Galladay, that could actually trickle into a guy like Sterling Shepard. So that's sort of my thought there. Again, at the 23rd round, right, Byron Pringle was taken just ahead of him. Right, like, I don't know. I'll take a shot on Sterling Shepard. And then I took Mark Ingram there, and that sort of rounds out where I am through 24 rounds. So that's really the deal. Again, how did I do? I give myself a complete accomplished on the quarterbacks, accomplished on top two tight ends, basically in the Goddard or above tier, two top 20 tight ends. I'll take a yes for that. I got the running backs, you know, that two basically running backs kind of in a 2-year window. I'll give myself a yes on that. I think Jacobs, like, I'll count him sort of in that. It's not ideal, but I'll count him in that. And then I've failed on the wide receiver accomplishments, but I think I have some options. And I have I have that wide receiver. I can recreate that wide receiver in aggregate off my bench. So that's really my thought there, and sort of how I put the team together. So I hope this helps. It's 55 minutes here or so. I'm going to sort of create some of this stuff into some content for the book because I thought this was a fun draft. A lot of decision points and a lot of different stuff. So I hope this was helpful. And until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk again very soon.